Wisconsin. Justice Stacy is recused from this matter. Is it Ms. Holst?
Yes, good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning to you.
My name is Jordan Holst, and I'm here as counsel to the Rock on behalf of Jimmy Van Barnes, the appellant in this matter. This matter concerns an automobile liability insurance policy. Appellant was injured in an automobile accident, and he sought underinsured motorist coverage from the appellee. Appellee denied the coverage, stating that the policy had been canceled, effective 9 days prior to this accident. At the heart of this case is Nebraska Revised Statute 44516. That statute outlines the procedures that insurance companies must employ when canceling automobile liability insurance policies. Section 1 reads, no notice of cancellation of a policy to which Section 44515 applies shall be effective unless mailed by a registered or certified mail, and continues on to describe the requisite time periods. Your Honors, the language mailed by registered or certified mail is the language at the crux of this case. Black's Law Dictionary describes the word mail as follows. A letter, package, or other mailable matter is mail when it is properly addressed, stamped with the proper postage, and deposited in a proper place for receipt of mail. The legislature did not include first-class mail as an option for mailing cancellation notices. As this court stated in Saunders v. Mittlater, the clear intent of the legislation is that if one's coverage is to be so canceled, that fact should be made clear to him. And the requirement of certified or registered mail facilitates proof of notice.
So 516 says, in addition to what you said, to named insured.
Correct. As you have read in Appley's brief,
excuse me, whereas 522 reads to the named insured at the address shown in the policy.
Correct.
That's
that
a little different.
Is not mirrored in
right. And then 523.1b says to the named insured at the address shown in the policy.
Correct.
So in the statute that is applicable here, 516, it says to named insured. Do these different provisions inform us of anything meaningful?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe that a plain reading of 516 has to infer that it's going to be sent to the most obvious address, which I would assume would be the address that is in the policy.
What? Say that again. That's your assumption.
Correct. 516, you're correct in stating that it doesn't say to where.
Doesn't have these doodads, those other ones have.
It does not, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
But,
and is there an argument to be made that when the legislature wants to be a little more precise with respect to getting the notice to the insured, they have got some language then and can do it?
I would say that that would be correct, Your Honor. However, I think to assume that the legislature failed to put in to the address specified in the policy, to assume that because that's not in there, they didn't intend that, would be quite confusing because then there's no direction as to where this address is supposed to be sent. And if the clear intent of the legislation is that the notices are to be getting to these people. So that
we have said that.
Correct, yeah.
Certified, get the notice to the insured so they're informed.
Correct.
Right. I'm just asking you as a matter of statutory construction if this matters.
I don't believe it does because I don't think that it's inconsistent with Statute 522. I don't know why the legislature failed to include specific language as to where it should be addressed.
Okay, thank you.
What's the difference between registered or certified?
They're not super different. The similarity is that the government is the one who's verifying where they are going. Certified mail, from what I understand, and it's with a grain of salt, has the ability to have the return receipt requested, and registered mail has the ability to have insurance on it. But they both come with tracking numbers so that you may be able to see that the parcels are delivered.
If you looked at the postal regulations, wouldn't you find that registered mail requires a higher degree of internal accountability within the postal service, direct handoff from one party to another within the agency that isn't required would certify?
From what I remember, I think that is correct, Your Honor. But I think what's important to note is that registered and certified mail are both a higher standard of care by the post office than a first-class mailing.
The legislature has, when it specifies return receipt requested, has indeed, in various statutes, used exactly that language, certified mail, return receipt requested, haven't they?
Correct. And we have never contended that return receipt is required in this case. I believe that the legislature was very intentional in leaving off return receipt in this situation because they wanted to avoid putting that burden on insurance companies to ensure that people actually physically pick up their parcel from the post office. I think that people may oftentimes dodge certified mail. And so the intent of the legislation, while to get it to the named insured, was also attempting to strike a balance between that and the burden on the insurance company of actually proving receipt by the insured.
How does this affect the fact that there was no house address on the letter?
Because we don't see, well, there was no house address on the PS Form 3877 in the record. And our position is that we have nothing from the government verifying to where this was addressed. If you look at the PS Form 3877, under the addressee block, it states to place the name, the street address, the city, state, and zip. And when you look at the forms provided by the appellee, on every line they fail to state the street address to which the parcel was sent. So they fail to fully comply with the requirements of the form. And we don't have, there's no other evidence in the record. Appellee points to the actual cancellation notices themselves for proof that they were sent to the proper address, but there's nothing to indicate what their policies and procedures were for actually sending them on.
So who has the burden to prove that notice was given?
Under Jeltma v. Scottsdale, which this court decided, the burden of establishing an effective cancellation before a loss is on the insurance company. We and Appellee both cite United States v. Ahrens, a decision by the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, for the proposition that PS Form 387 is the recommended procedure for showing that certified mailing was sent to the addresses specified. And again, I would like to highlight that language, addresses specified. There were no addresses specified on the PS Form 3877 provided by the Appellee. Again, they named the named insured, the city, state, and zip, but failed to include a house number or a street name on that form.
Are you then saying that the 3877 is a preferred recordation?
Yes. Our position is that we agree with United States v. Ahrens and that a PS Form 3877 is the preferred procedure if you're sending more than one parcel of certified mail
to record it. And what do you do with the cases that say what 3877 is preferred, but if it's missing this and that, it can be bolstered by other evidence?
Well, first of all, if we're going to look at Coleman v. Commissioner, which was a tax court case that the appellee cites in their brief, the deficiency in that case was the PS Form 3877 failed to have the postal stamp on the second page. There were three contiguous pages of PS Form 3877. The stamp was on the first page, and on the third, failed to include the stamp on the second page.
You're not contending that this particular form was the only way of proving that certified mail was deposited?
No, Your Honor, we are not contending that. But we are saying that in addition, the appellee has only produced this deficient form, and the evidence produced beyond that is insufficient to support their burden that they have sent this in compliance with 44516. And for that reason, we are asking this court to find as a matter of law that that evidence is insufficient, a deficient form, and insufficient evidence of what they actually did to corroborate a proper mailing.
Now, this is here on essentially on summary judgment.
Correct.
What did they put on, I presume, their evidence first? What did you put on?
We put on an affidavit of our client stating that he did not receive the mailing, and we had a lot of the same exhibits in terms of the PS Form 3877 was one of our exhibits at summary judgment to show that it was not properly completed and that there was no evidence as to where the cancellation notice was allegedly sent. So the trial court essentially looked at all of the evidence and said, yes, it's problematic that the PS Form 3877 wasn't properly filled out. But, you know, they have their policies and procedures in place, so I'm going to assume. However, the policies and procedures before the trial court did not indicate how they addressed.
Would you agree that if we determined, you're not going to agree with my premise, but let me put it this way. If you agree, would you agree with me that if we were to find that there was enough evidence to shift the burden of you to go forward, whatever you presented didn't rebut their evidence? You're resting your hat, if you will, on they didn't have enough evidence to require that burden to shift. Yes.
I would agree with that assessment because our only evidence that we presented outside the PS 43877 to indicate that he had not received the notice was his own affidavit stating that he did not receive.
And that really does not speak at all to the issue of was it deposited.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hansen. Good morning to you.
Please the court. My name is Jane Hansen, and I represent American Standard in this case. And I think if you look at the, read the briefs, look at the evidence, this is a very, what I would consider a simple issue. And it comes down to whether that Form 3877, which American Standard sometimes refers to as the logbook, was so defective or so deficient that the other evidence that American Standard presented in support of its summary judgment motion did not fill in those gaps. And the district court determined that taking all of the evidence as a whole, even though there was not a street address or a street number, there was still sufficient evidence on the Form 3877. As well as the affidavits of the American Standard procedures that were in place just to make sure this statute was complied with every time they sent out a cancellation, to make sure it was sent by certified mail. And just to clarify, certified mail is different from certified mail return receipt requested. That is not what's required by the statute. All American Standard has to show is that it sent the letter by certified mail.
What was your evidence?
We submitted affidavits from the manager of the department that prepares the letters. And along with those affidavits went a printout of the various procedures, what would pop up on the computer.
Was there any evidence specifically about the address that this would have gone to?
No. But the mail, I guess, to say that we have to send it to the correct address, I guess you would assume the clerk that sends out mail would know that. And if you look at the certified letter itself, it has the address, the correct address of the named insured. There's been no dispute that that address on the letter is not correct, that it's not his letter, or it's not his address. So we have the affidavit of the manager of the department that puts together the letters. We have an affidavit as well as a summary of those procedures, and every time a pop-up would be certified mail. And the way that the tracking number is then attached to the...
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you said just a moment ago the address on the letter was correct. No one disputes that. But the original letter you don't have, correct?
We do not have the original letter.
Okay, so when you refer to the letter, what letter are you referring to?
I'm referring to a copy of the certified letter that was sent. That was maintained
so
by
after the letter was printed out, the envelope, you folks, your company client, made a copy of it?
Yes, we have a copy of it. It's Exhibit 8. Actually, there were three letters. There were three auto policies that were canceled on the same day. And if you look at Exhibit 19, which is the form, this is the critical piece of evidence. It shows three entries to Jimmy Barnes, Gretna, Nebraska. And if you look at that form, there are so many other checks that show it went by certified mail. Each one has a tracking number. A letter would not have a tracking number if it was not sent by certified mail. And what's most important...
Could you have a tracking number on priority?
On priority mail?
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is certified mail, there is a tracking number.
Okay.
And this form only deals with certified mail, COD, express mail. So my understanding is, in terms of the what this form is used for, certified mail is the only one with a tracking number.
So you're saying if the 3877 is deficient in some respect, and there's no dispute, it has no street number and no street name, and the box certified is not checked off, it has some problems. You could bolster that by other evidence. Is that, is
yes.
This, am I following you?
Yes.
And that your procedures would, in your view, confirm that an address would have been on the letter in addition to copies of the letter/notice.
Yes.
Right. And then how do you respond to appellant's argument that in Exhibit 14, the procedure with respect to certified mail says in the log you have to put down other information? It doesn't say put down address or street address. And that's that is the direction to the folks making the log. Whereas, under certified mail return receipt, your procedure says show insured's name and address. That's not our case.
That is not our
case. So your folks are directed to prepare a log, pardon me, with other information, not name and address. So does that bolster your position that the street number must have been there?
Well, I guess I can't answer that one way or another. I think it is, there are a couple of things that bolster the fact that the envelope had an address on it. Whether the logbook has the address is not the critical thing, I don't think. The critical thing is, did that envelope have an address on it? Because I think clearly the logbook shows it went by certified mail. As I understand the appellant's argument.
And you would say, but I don't think there's a dispute, that there's extra money associated with that.
Yes.
On the money columns.
And the affidavit clearly
right.
shows that.
But that you paid more money does not necessarily follow that there was a street address or street name.
I agree with you.
Counsel, how does the tracking number correlate to the address?
It does not.
Well, as you said, because there's a tracking number, that means that there was a correct address on the envelope.
I misspoke if I said that. What I meant is the fact that there is a tracking number shows it went by certified mail.
That it went by certified mail, but we don't necessarily know.
We don't.
You were about to show us an exhibit, I believe. Exhibit 8. What's on Exhibit 8, and what does that show?
Exhibit 8 is the letter. Not the letter. We don't have the letter. It's a copy of the letter.
Is this what the industry calls a notice letter?
Cancellation notice is what we call it.
Is that a form copy?
Well, it's an actual copy.
Is there an address
it's
on the
It's an actual
letter?
Copy and
yeah,
it has an address.
It's
something you can generate
yes.
after the event.
Yes, we have to keep
sure.
a record of the letter
okay.
in case we are ever showing up here having to prove it.
Is there a deliverable address on that copy?
Yes, it says 201 Hackberry Drive, and there's been no allegation evidence that that's not the correct address.
What would the post office do if you gave a letter that was non-deliverable? What would they do?
Well,
they don't throw them out, do they?
Well, I don't think they sign the logbook. I mean, the logbook is signed by the postmaster documenting that they received 8 pieces of mail to go by certified mail. I guess we would have to assume that the postmaster saw an envelope without an address and still documented that I have this mailable envelope and I'm sending
I guess
it
my point
mail.
Is,
I don't think that's a...
I guess my point is if you delivered a registered or certified letter to the post office that was non-deliverable, they probably would return it at some point.
I think they would send it back with the logbook because what happens is this is a copy of pages from an actual book that goes from American Family in St. Joe to the post office with the letters, and then it comes back the next day.
Do you have an affidavit from like a postal person? Not that they got this very letter or would be expected to know that, but it's our custom when presented by a logbook by a vendor that if there's not good addresses on the envelope, we won't sign off.
Well, this is not in the record, but I can tell you off the record. I called post offices all over the place trying to get an affidavit, and they would not help me.
They're not interested in joining your lawsuit.
Do they have rules and regulations that are published that would say that?
No, not that I'm aware of.
That say don't, if there's not a good address on a certified letter, don't take it and don't indulge a logbook?
I'm not aware of any such regulation.
So your suggestion is we can assume that the postal office performed in a careful manner.
Well, what it says is total number of pieces received in post office. I guess to me, I think we can assume that when the postmaster signs this, verifying that he has at least what appears on its face, a deliverable certified letter. Otherwise, he would not verify that.
And that's the assumption that should be injected into the summary judgment to establish your entitlement to judgment. Is that your position?
I think that is a...
Is that assumption
that is a,
required for you to have carried your burden?
Well, I think that we can assume certain things. And also, I want to point out that there is no legal authority for the appellant's argument that because there's not a street address and name, that we have not sustained our burden. There's no authority for that. And we've cited tax cases, tax deficiency cases.
And those tend to be, if there's something wrong with the 38, whatever it is, right, you can bolster it with other
right.
stuff.
Right, you can fill it in with other evidence, which is our position that we have done that. And if you look at the Coleman case, to me, the deficiency is even worse because one of the pages did not have that sort of certification of the postmaster that he received those letters. And the court found that it had been filled in with other evidence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned and you are excused.